Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Well, tonight we bid adieu to season 4 of Better Call Saul. We answer a lot of very important questions about Werner. Where did he go? What's he doing? What was he thinking? And Jimmy, is he going to get it done? Could he get it done? Kim's on the case, so she'll probably get it done. But if you're sad that this is the end of the season, it's all good, man. The Better Call Saul After Show starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin. The winner takes it all.
Ah, yes, that's right. Right after we're done with the show, Al and I will be out singing karaoke at one of the fine karaoke establishments in the San Fernando Valley here in Los Angeles. And we will indeed be singing the winner in honor of Jimmy and Chuck. And if you think this sounds an awful lot like ABBA, you're absolutely right. Didn't sound so much like ABBA when Jimmy and Chuck sang it, but that's all right. Some amazing work from Michael McKean and Bob Odenkirk singing this song. Welcome to the season 4 finale of Better Call Saul. I'm Christian Blatt, joined as always by Al Gregg.
Your boy Al G over here, the other Bavarian boy. That's the big Bavarian boy. I'm the little Bavarian boy, a.k.a. Young Street Life.
That's right, Young Street Life. And, you know, there's a lot packed into this episode. The episode itself had an actual, like, running time without commercials of about 60 minutes. And they packed a lot in there, but they really only focused on the two stories when you think about it. So we deal with Werner, and there's a lot of Jimmy because, you know, I mean, it's not – the show's not called Better Call Gus. You know what I mean? So it's important that we focus on Jimmy. Just sort of an overall, your thoughts on the season as a whole and where this episode measures up in terms of other season finales.
The arc is complete.
Yes.
From Jimmy to Saul, and it's not like we couldn't see it coming. We all know where it's going to end up, but it's really a credit to the show's creators, Vince Gilligan, the fact that you know where the character is going to end up, but yet you're still hooked on every line and every scene.
Yeah, and you know, reading a little bit after we were done watching the show, you know, just some comments from various writers and creators of the show, that when they started, they were convinced that at the end of season 1, he would be Saul. And then season 2 was like, well, obviously it'll be the end of this season. And then eventually they just kind of gave up, and they're just like, you know what, we'll know it when it feels right. And this was the year where it felt right. And it was all building towards that moment. And, you know, we get some mixed reviews in the chat. And if you are watching live on YouTube right now, please join us in the chat. We always have a very robust chat. We have people waiting before we get started, and they're having whole conversations, and we always appreciate that. But you have some people who didn't really enjoy season 4 as much. But I think even for them, at least you're like, all right, but now we get to see Saul, and that's what we really wanted.
That's what we needed to get to, and I'm going to go out on a ledge. Maybe the people missed what I missed. I want to say I missed that big heist, violent, cathartic, set-piece sequence, stealthy thing. Well, there was elements of that, but there wasn't that big cathartic, you know, kind of like set-piece. It's very – but the show's always been very character-driven. And it didn't disappoint me. Only reason I say I missed it is that I noticed like that was the element that was missing. But story-wise and character-wise, I felt complete. And that to me, that would have just been like, okay, another, you know, add another cherry on top. But, you know, it felt complete to me, and I felt like I learned everything that I wanted to learn.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even in the chat right now, someone pointed – Crescian Medston points out – that I can't believe we didn't get any nacho in there, but honestly, didn't even think about it and honestly wasn't needed. Yeah, it's like any of the stuff that they didn't get to, it's like, you know, next year, you know, it's all right. It'll all still be there. And, you know, I think that it was right to kind of focus on Jimmy predominantly and to tidy up the Werner, the German architect who there were a lot of theories last week as to what he was doing. Was he – had he smartened up? Was he on the run? I think when we talked about it last week, the majority of us felt that he had run away. And to find out in this episode that he was doing all that and just running away for the 4 days that he asked for, it was like, you clearly didn't understand the job you were hired for. You didn't understand the people you were working for, that you thought you could run away and then go back. Because if you got to run away, you got to keep running for the rest of your life, which, I mean, unfortunately he did. It just wasn't much longer for Werner.
And Werner's understanding is so naive. It was almost childlike. Like, he literally thought, like, well, I can talk to Mike. He's my friend. Put Gus Fring on the line, and I'll fix it.
Yeah.
He literally
Let me explain to Mr. Fring. And, like, yeah. And Mike's like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Like, you don't understand Mr. Fring if you think you can sweet talk him.
Hot take.
Well, and so we have the bell for those that are not watching on YouTube, because I wished I would have known that it would have factored into last week's episode. So I brought it today thinking that we would get a little more of that. But we'll use it periodically.
We'll work it in. And I'm just going to give it so we don't drive our engineer Josh crazy. Josh can talk to us in our ear where he likes it, whether we can see it. You want us to just hold it up, or you want to just get it in the wide shot. But we're telling you, we're going to be hitting this bell, man.
It's all right. He'll let us know. And obviously, if we're doing it too much, let us know in the chat, or Josh can let us know. So let's kind of go through that storyline where it picks up where we ended last week, you know. Mike's getting the letter. He's starting to put together a timeline, how quickly he was able to get away. And full court press. Mike is on the trail, which is not good for Werner, because if Mike's on the trail, he's definitely going
Mike
to
Mike always
it.
Gets his man.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, and this is why they have transcripts of when you do something like call your wife. So they're able to get back to it. And, you know, the poor guy at the wire transfer place, you know.
Talk about not knowing what he was in for.
Yeah, exactly. So, Mike just gave him a sob story, which, nice work by Mike, by the way. You know, just like, oh, I'm so worried. That's all right. You can't show me. I get it. Store policy. Can you tell me where the nearest hospital is?
That talk was, about pulling at your
heartstrings. Yeah, it's just like, all right, I'll show you. And, you know, just kind of watching him put it together. And then he's like, right, the hot springs. And he's calling all the hot springs. And then we noticed Lalo's on the trail.
Mm.
And he doesn't know why he's interested, I don't think. But he's like, all this excitement, I'm gonna be on the trail and, you know, on Mike's tail. And Al and I were talking when we were watching, sort of, I've learned a new trick. If I ever feel like I'm being followed, I know how to, you know, get the drop on somebody.
Or at least hit that bell.
We could hit the bell, but you go into the parking structure or parking lot, and you just chew all that gum. And I figured out what he was doing, but I still liked watching him do it.
The funny thing is, okay, the first time he reached for the gum, it was like, okay, you never see Mike chew gum. That's just not his personality.
It's not natural.
It's not natural. You see the pistol in there, so that's established for later. And immediately as he starts chewing, I'm like, okay, this is gonna have to do something with, you know, he's gonna solve this thing with a Lala. And here's the thing I want to compare and kind of contrast Mike and Lala. Okay. Two wonderful characters. We talked about Lalo, like the sadistic guy who will be singing a jig and dancing while he's killing you, you know, and Mike being this very, you know, methodical and kind of artful person. And obviously, Mike was able to get the job done because he's able to be a bit more artful. He's able to pull on the heartstrings. He's a cop, but he knows about people. He's a studier of people. He knows how to use the velvet glove or the hammer. And Lalo, He doesn't have the deafness that Mike does with people, but he gets the job done. Like a gangster would. I'm going to crawl in there on my hands and knees over the ceiling through the air conditioner, and I'm going to put my pistol in your face till you tell me what I need.
And then I'm going to kill you. So, yeah, and, you know, he just needed to find it all out. And, you know, he figures it out well enough. And when we see Werner, he's getting a phone call, which I think we could assume was from Mike. But nope. Lalo is, yeah.
That was a nice twist.
That was very nice. And you're like, oh, I don't know how well this is going. And he's in the middle of explaining, well, let me tell you what the instructions are. And, you know, look.
So naive.
And it's an interesting moment because Mike stresses to Gus that he can take care of this. There's another way. Let me make this right so that we don't have to kill the guy. And more than anything, I think Mike realizes there's no good out of killing this guy's wife. You know, when he kind of has the conversation with Gus and he's like, I think there's another way. And Gus just says, there's no point in continuing this conversation.
And anybody who was thinking that Mike was callous for having to kill Werner, granted, he was, but he gave him all the chances in the world. The best he can do for you is saying, I'm going to kill you. The best I can do for you is not kill your wife. So don't make it hard on her.
Werner figures it out pretty quickly why he has to do it. Finally. Yeah, and he just yells at his wife and tells her to go home. And
I'm sorry to cut you off, man, but I thought he was going to be too scared. I was worried he was going to be too scared and whiny that he was going to start slipping up and telling her things, literally, and endanger her. I'm glad he manned up to that point, at least.
Yeah, I think that's when he realizes the severity of what's going on, you know, because up until that point he was hoping to talk to Gus and all of this. And it's sort of just accepting his fate to be like, there's so many stars in New Mexico. I'm going to go over there and have a better look.
I was surprised Mike gave him that leeway. You're going to let him, all right, if you want to talk shots, I'm going
to
kill you.
You saw how close Mike was to him. He had the gun out.
Yeah, it wasn't any other way.
If the chubby middle-aged German guy tries to run,
he ain't getting far.
Exactly. He's definitely not going to get far. And sort of the moment when he does it, we have some comments in the chat, again from Cretian Medstone. Mike pulling the trigger was an amazing scene as well. Loved him on the phone with his wife. It was so sad. And Millie McGill, related to Jimmy, possibly. The cinematography in the Werner death scene was great. The wide shot where it's like we're there out in the desert, and as it would really happen, I think what we see it, and then there is a little bit of a delay before we actually hear it. So if we were that far away, we'd see the flash. And then you'd hear the gunshot after the fact. Sad turn of events for Werner, but he knew what he signed up for. I can't feel that bad for him, but it was really well handled because you could tell Mike was just like, this is my job, this is what I do. I don't agree with it, but that doesn't mean that I should send this guy back to Germany and let him get away.
And the thing is, because Mike told that story in Breaking Bad about no half measures, about he kept letting this guy who was like a wife beater and just total asshole, he kept letting him get off until he finally took no half measures, didn't give him a chance. This is way in Breaking Bad. But because Mike had I was going to see how consistent and they were going to hold to that lesson, because this is a lesson he's referring to back when he was a cop, even before the Better Call Saul days. So I was happy that the writers felt authentic enough and devoted enough to the stories and to the character to not make Mike actually pull a half measure and let him go. Because we know Mike, that guy's pulling on his heartstrings, but Mike is past that at this point, too. He doesn't want to do it, but he will do it.
Yeah, and Melly McGill actually says, I thought Mike would actually do a half measure and let him sneak off in the night. That's the kind of loose end that Mr. Fring doesn't stand for, and I think, you know, he knew that he had made his case, and when Gus is like, we're not going to talk about it, he's like, all right.
Mike knew that.
And Mike realizes he has to do it himself, which, you know, because Gus is saying, stay right there. And he's like, you know what, I'm going to take care of it. And Gus is even like, are you sure? You know, it's sort of a great, like, all right, I do trust you, but I got to make sure you're up for this. And it's really, you know, look, it's a turning point for Mike. I don't want to try and scroll through and find it, but somebody else pointed out, you know, before he started working for Gus, before this moment, really, you don't know that Mike would have been okay with not necessarily just killing, but killing this guy who didn't really deserve it.
And he honestly likes.
Yeah, right, exactly. So it was Mike, like George, had to put his own dog down. And, yeah, Mike broke bad a long time ago, Drew Leonard says. Oh, yeah, you'd have to do a prequel to the prequel to the prequel if you want to show us that. But I think, I think it played out great. And it was the only way that it could end. Now, I had a thought about something that Mike said. Don't worry, your guys are going to be sent home. And I was thinking, like, he just told him that to make him feel better because you have to kill all the guys. And maybe they were going to kill all the guys to begin with. Maybe Mike didn't know that. Hmm. But Gus may very well have always thought that he was going to kill all of them. You know, Gus was just like, yeah, when this gig is over, we're going to kill everyone because no one can know what they were doing and where they were. You know, you can't have any loose ends. What did you think about that comment from Mike? Do you think they're really going to send the whole crew home?
Christian, I think you gave us hot take number three. As I hit that bell like Salamanca. Only because, man, when even when Mike said it, I honestly believe that Mike in his heart, he felt like he wasn't lying when he said,
he might believe it.
Yeah.
He also might not, but I think there's a good chance that he believes it.
There's a chance that he believes it.
Because if he didn't believe it, it's not like Werner asked.
Right.
So he brought it up. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think he thinks that's what's going to happen. I personally don't think that's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I don't think Kai gets to go home and the rest of the guys either.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, and we're getting into predictions all in like next season, which I hadn't even thought about, but it's a good point and it's something to think about.
And Drew Leonard was the one who said it. He says, thanks for the shout out. I definitely think the whole crew is going down. Yeah, he's the one who said it. And AQRA624 says, if Gus did the hit, it would have been worse. I mean, Gus himself was never going to handle this. Gus has people, you know, not that Gus isn't capable of, but this is not something that Gus has to pull a trigger on.
Oh, he's hot got, take number four, I'm that, sorry.
There's plenty of hot takes, but in all honesty, like, Gus isn't going to shoot this guy. He's got too many people to do it. Chad Schumper points out, Mike sees the big picture. He knows if he doesn't do this, his business with Gus is done, and that's a dumb idea. And, you know, you don't really want to make him angry. You know, because you just never know quite. Well, you might have an indication for how he will respond. And Alex Chase agrees. We all know the crew is going to die. Gus always ties up his loose ends. You don't get to make a meth super lab and tell the tale and live to tell the tale. But what we do see at the end of all of it is someone who we know will live to tell the tale, at least from this point in history, is our friend Gail, who's looking at it and he's ready to start cooking, and Gus is like, not till it's ready. He's like, oh yeah, no, I know. I just, I was just kind of feeling it out. I need to go look at the, yeah. And then he just walked off. But nice to see Gail, and, it's sort of the little reminder of like, yeah, it's just going to take them longer than they thought, but obviously we always knew that it was going to work out for
them. Can I chime in on that?
Please do.
Up a good point. When he brings Gail down there, because what's the purpose? Because it's not done yet. He does need to bring her. I was asking myself, why is he doing this? What's the purpose of this? And is the purpose of Gus bringing Gail down this early to instill the fear of God in him? Because maybe he didn't sufficiently do it, you know, with this Werner guy. What do you think the point of that was?
It's interesting. I don't know that it's necessarily that. I think he was trying to gauge, like, so can we use it like this? And he's like, well, we'd have to get a lot of fans. And when he starts doing the explanation, he's like, okay, it's not ready. We have to still do it. Right. I think he legitimately wanted his opinion.
Okay.
And, it was like, all right, we'll get to the point where we can get it done. And this, unfortunately, is not it.
But for what it's worth, the way Gus was lit, he had that, like, half-lit skeleton face. I mean, it was so ominous. Even Gail was scared.
It's right as you said that, Jeffrey Townend in the chat said, what was with the evil look Gus gave Gail? Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, that was probably the subtext in there.
Yeah, and also a callback to a moment earlier, Melly McGill points out, Gus got to kill Lalu. Well, you know, all in time, you know. You can't get it all done in the season finale. Lanky Lad says, thinking maybe Gail will have to take over for the construction given the number of pointers he gave for what was left to be done. I don't think he has the know-how to get a job like this done. I think he understands what he's good at and the conditions he needs, but I think you need somebody like Werner, unfortunately. So, you know, you found a couple people that you were able to interview, as we saw earlier in the season. So I think that, you know, Gus will find somebody that can finish. I mean, obviously it's going to get finished, but, you know, he'll find somebody that's not Gale, who wouldn't really be in his comfort zone.
Christian, we're talking about, okay, Werner, obviously he couldn't complete the job. And I'm thinking, who do you hire for the job? I'm going back to the other guys he interviewed. And while Werner seemed to be the best man for the job, I guess, who had the right information and was honest about how long it would take, what they learned was just because he was the right person for the job, he really wasn't the right person as far as like this being a part of the underworld and the gangster world. He just wasn't built for that. So my question is like, who do you hire in that case? You can't hire another Werner. You can't hire another Gale. Do you sacrifice and get somebody who knows a little bit less but is a little bit more streetwise? And then you're worried about how much, you know, he kind of wants to know things. I think it's a conundrum. And I don't know who you hire for that.
I think if you're able to find one crew, you're going to find another one somehow. Might take some time. And a lot more money, but, you know, the work has started. You know, they were – I think they said a couple episodes ago that they were half done. So they're probably, you know, not quite three quarters done, maybe half done at this point, a little more than half done.
And if anybody checks out, you just keep knocking them off again.
Well, you might have to. And Alex Chase wants to point out, he gives credit to Giancarlo Esposito. He says that face Gus makes when you know he wants you to low-key murder someone is priceless. Phenomenal actor. Absolutely, I agree. It's sort of the way that he played everything. He's like, stay right there. And that's when Mike's like, no, damn it. All right, I'll do it. Well, we will move on to the Jimmy story in a moment. But first, Al has this important message for all of you.
Ladies and germs, thank you for your patience. Oh, and I'm going to insist on using that bell one last time, ladies and germs. Christian bought the bell. We got him to thank for it, but I just can't resist using it. A note from AfterBuzz. Hey, AfterBuzzers. Our network produces after shows for nearly all your favorite TV shows. From dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more, there's no network that works harder to serve their television fans. But we need your help. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. By subscribing to our channel, YouTube will suggest content that's tailor-made for you, and you'll help AfterBuzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about those pesky notifications, don't be, because they're optional. So hit that subscribe button. And now for this channel, and check out other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know you did so in the comments, and we'll thank you on air. For now, thanks for being the best fans and for helping us be the ESPN of TV Talk.
Thank you, Al. So now we move on to how the episode started with a pastime near and dear to my heart. Karaoke, and I was very excited because I thought, well, let's see what Jimmy and Kim are going to do together, you know? This is obviously at the point, was we see it's at the point when Jimmy first becomes a lawyer, when he got made, as it were, and not surprisingly, Chuck's going to head home, and, you know, Jimmy just is like, oh, come on, get my big brother to hang around, and I love that... they do that song together and get so drunk, and, you know, Chuck puts him to bed, and he stays. You can tell he wasn't initially going to stay. He was just like, well, I put a bucket. All right, what do you want for breakfast? And I just love Jimmy's pancakes! And I thought that was great. So but it's great that we start with this, you know, just tender, very sweet moment. It shows that somewhere in their complicated, very messy relationship, there is this bond, this love of family that in this situation, you're able to actually see it. Give us your thoughts, Al, on how we saw that play out. at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, man, that flashback, it was so compelling because it captured all the nuances in the relationship. I mean, you highlighted the main point that it wasn't all bad times. They actually had good times where they bonded together and they had this brotherly love, and it was like the, you know, the big brother and the little brother. But what I also like how it captured the nuances is the song. I always like to say the song playing in the background is subtext, but it's not really subtext. It's very overt. Winner takes it all. And that was, you know, that was Jimmy's mantra, you know, from here on after this point when he goes through all these changes with his character. And even, again, talking about the nuances, even when they're doing the karaoke thing and, you know, you figure Jimmy, he's Mr. Social Butterfly, it's his night. You know, he's trying to convince Chuck to hang around. But Chuck actually takes over and takes the lead, you know, toward the end of the song.
That was a great moment because, it also shows you that part of the relationship. Yeah. It's like, no, I don't really want to be here.
But
I don't know. But if you insist. Yeah, exactly. So... I thought that that was great, and then we sort of, you know, then we jump in this storyline, we jump to the more present day where we see Jimmy at Chuck's grave, and you're like, well, what exactly is he, you know, you can hear him. He's muttering watermelon pickles, 1001, 1003, you know, and you're just like, all right. And, you know, he's just playing it up for show. That's what it all is, to show how grieving he is. How sincere he is, and nothing says sincerity more than literally using the words boo-hoo, which he did. He was just kept saying boo-hoo and boo-hoo over again. So what do you think about this tactic, Al, of Jimmy playing up the grief card?
Yeah, I mean, it just gets lower and lower for Jimmy just when you think he can't get any lower. Even when he brought Kim in the scams, in the scam last week, he gets her to openly talk about, you know, just being fake. And you hear Jimmy talk about, oh, yeah, all my cell phone clients, you know, those losers. You know, it kind of rubs me the wrong way. I thought, like, those are your people. But the more and more we learn about Jimmy, it's like his heart is dead and he doesn't care about anybody else, and that's why he's so capable of doing that. And he goes, we'll see one other point, you know, that's crucial to his arc, but that part was very revealing.
Yeah, and you know what surprised me is that he actually paid for this reading room at HHM. I just thought that he had paid the server there to tell people that he had paid for it, to make people think that he had paid for it. And then I'm like, wait, he spent $23,000. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he could have just spent a few hundred and gotten people to say that he did it. But then I guess the room wouldn't have been there.
And Jimmy thinks he's going to get clients out of this.
Well, you know, I mean, he just wants to be a lawyer again. So I get that, you know, you have to – and I'm sure that, you know, Kim did a good job. She definitely was able to come up with a good scam. And, you know, Jimmy needs a little work in his idea that, okay, so then after this, I'm going to rescue a judge from a fire. And Kim just looks at him. He's like, all right, you know, maybe not that. Maybe.
The illusions of grandeur.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And so the next thing we get is the scholarship recipients. And I like the way that they cut together sort of the sit down with all the different kids. It's edited very messily. You could just show them. You could let them finish a sentence or a word. But they're all abruptly cut off because that's how it is for everybody who's evaluating them. And what we get from Jimmy is that he focuses on Chrissy Esposito, who the one lady on the panel is like, the shoplifter? And that's all the point for Jimmy. He makes the point and he chases after her. Which, you know, seemed to freak out that girl a little bit. But he points out, you were never going to get it. You made a mistake. And they're never forgetting it. As far as they're concerned, that's who you are. They are never, ever letting you in. You're not going to play by the rules, though. Remember, the winner takes it all. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah, I think so. I got to catch my bus. Talk about that realization, Al, for Jimmy. You know, obviously... You don't need a Little Orphan Annie Dakota ring to figure out oh, he realizes, why is he working so hard? They're never going to let him in. So talk a little bit about your thoughts about the way Jimmy handles that.
And it's almost like not just Jimmy, but the writers telling us, you know, in no uncertain terms, this is where he's at. Winner takes all. And we saw it even, I think, a few episodes ago when you see Howard Hamlin is kind of, you know, in grief and kind of disheveled. Well, most people even still pick pity on him. And Jimmy back then was like, no, I'm going to needle you while I got you down until it hurts. And it shows, again, like, not only the drive, but it's the lack of compassion. And here's another thing. And I'm interested to know your take on this, Christian. I understand from a cynical perspective to say these people are never going to accept you once you make a mistake. I can even equate that to, like, sexism or racism. You only be thought of as so high. But there was a part of that speech, though, so you will cut corners and you will make your own rules.
Yeah.
It's felt kind of dangerous in spite of him being right. I mean, it's like, do we really want to – is this the one thing we really want to be telling her?
Yeah, and I think that it's clearly something that – he could have benefited from being told multiple times in his life. You know, when he was younger, maybe even a little later, somebody just like pointing out, hey, you have to be better than them. You're going to be on the 50th floor. They're down on the 30th. You look down on them. And I think that kind of puts the fire in his belly for like, yeah. But it's all a little much for him because, as Robert Kirkendall points out in the chat, the anger Jimmy expressed when his car wouldn't start revealed the inner turmoil, just how much of an impact all of this was having on him. You know, this realization, the $23,000 for the reading room, but, you know, just sort of dealing with grief that, you know, maybe he legitimately didn't actually have, but still having to deal with it. And so, you know, we just see how dejected he is. You know, the car won't start, but then he actually gets home. He's kind of ready to give up, but Kim was never going to give up. And then he has the realization, the letter. And there was so much talk about that letter earlier in the season here in the chat. If there was ever a time where Kim could have said that she wrote the letter, it's now. But there was one thing that she said. Was, you know, Jimmy's like, he wrote a good letter. She jumps in really fast. He wrote a great letter. So,
ooh, I didn't even pick that up.
So that doesn't entirely dispel the notion maybe she wrote it.
They could be stretching this reveal out to next season.
Yeah. And by the way, whomever said in the chat at the end of an episode that they had read that Kim was going to die in episode 10, you might want to start using additional sources. Because I was actually expecting that through the whole episode. I'm like, well, somebody said it in the chat. It must have. It's like, I read it on the internet. It must be true. But I kind of liked that it was wrong, though, because I like her so much. You know, look, we know it's not going anywhere great for the two of them. She doesn't necessarily have to end up dead. But, you know, if she does, I'm glad that we have a little bit more of the two of them. So I don't want to run out of time. So that was the quote. Yeah, Chuck wrote a great letter. And then she says, Chuck wrote a great letter is what she says. But she stresses to Jimmy, it's not just the words, you know, it's how you read them. So Jimmy's there. He's got the letter. He is reading from it. We've heard the letter before. And he notices that the one lady is not listening, shuffling through the paperwork. So he's like, I gotta call an audible here. I gotta do it a little
less. Oh, so you think that was an audible then? Because I was wondering if you'd even plan to do that.
No, I think he was going to read it. And then he realizes, and it just sort of all feeds into his overall frame of mind here at the end of the episode. And for what he tells Kim in the last couple minutes, he says he can't read it. I was going to try and move you with my brother's eloquent words. This letter's between me and him, and it should stay that way. Because I'm going to tug at your heartstrings more than this letter that I've already read will. He loved me as a brother. He didn't love me as a lawyer. I'll never be as moral as him, as smart, as respected. I'll never be as good as Chuck, but I can try. I can try. And he says, I'm lucky I got this letter. I never had a chance to write him a letter. and tell him all the things that I should have. Very powerful, and you can see the people. You see Kim crying.
And he had me hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, well, you and Kim and I are not the only ones. And she's just like, oh, my God, look at this. This is what he's needed to do the whole season. Not that she thinks of it in terms of a season. But this whole year since her brother his brother died. This is what he's needed to do. He's dealing with it. He's owning up to who he is. And so, like you're saying, Al, at that moment, you're like, yes, good for Jimmy. He's finally realized. So that's where you think he's at when he's finally speaking to people, the people who are evaluating him. And then as soon as he and Kim are in the hallway celebrating, he says, did you see that one asshole? He had actual tears. And she's really taken aback. Because she was an asshole who had tears. And she was just like, oh, no. You really are insincere.
That's when he lost Kim.
They nailed you. Yeah. And, you know, earlier she says, no matter what happens in there, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, by the way, I'm not with you, but I don't know how to tell you that at this point. You went the wrong way with this. And, yeah, I set the hook in. I'm so lucky I have this letter. And he talks about being in the Matrix, and he can see it all like in the Matrix. At that moment, and we'll talk about the last thing he says to Kim in a moment, but let's press pause on that. That moment, Kim's reaction, what are you thinking when you watch that, Al?
I don't know, man. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Just in the sense that, you know, that they're so good at is like building you up for this certain expectation and then pulling out the rug from you. But it really makes you like sad for him as a human being. We're talking about these fake characters, but we feel like they're real because they're so compelling.
I mean, you know, Jimmy McGill's Saul Goodman is so real because, mm-hmm. I mean, how many years now has he been in our lives? Almost 10 or mm-hmm. more, actually. I'm not good with numbers, okay, people? Mm-hmm. But more than 10
and
years.
And if we have time, I can go into that. I don't know if we have the news.
Well, we'll get to a little bit of news. I just want to – because this is so important. I want to make sure we get to this.
No doubt.
And then the lady comes up and is like, oh, Mr. McGill, you're still here. And I was wondering, hey – did she hear him calling everybody assholes?
I just knew somebody was going to hear him. That's how brave he was.
She's just like, I have good news. And he's like, yeah, I already know it. Because he – and it's just like, that's not the Jimmy from earlier this season. You know, that's young street life.
Mm.
But that's not getting his ass kicked by the kids. You know, that Jimmy who was a little – got knocked down a couple pegs. And he's like – right away he's like, oh, yeah, I need a DBA, doing business as, is what that stands for. Because I'm not practicing under McGill. And she's like, what? And what does he say to Kim? It's all good, man.
It's all good, man.
Yeah, I know.
He might as well have told
Saul Goodman.
Let me tell you, audience, okay? He might as well have told Kim, yeah, we'll do lunch.
Yeah, and she leaves her behind and she's like, who is this? Saul Goodman. Saul Goodman. And just the way that he delivered it was so perfect. And I expected there to be a little bit more because I was thrown off because of an extra long episode. I didn't realize how much time we'd put in. And then Vince Gilligan's name comes up. I'm like, oh, we're done. That's the season. But that is the moment we wanted. That is the moment we needed. We do have him as Saul Goodman.
The arc is complete.
And I can only imagine where we're going to go next season. And there are so many other things that we can see next season. You know, one of the things that we always do on this show, we have our segment for uncomfortable moments. I don't know if you're going to agree, Al, but it's Mike in the Desert with Verna. It's very uncomfortable, but in a way, it's very benevolent. It's like, I can't save you. Let me save your wife, you know?
Basically.
But then just the uncomfortable moment when Verna knows that it's coming and he's like, I'm going to go get a look at those stars. I don't know if you thought something else.
Yeah, no, that would have been one uncomfortable, but it ties up there with me again, like with the whole Gus taking Gail down to meet him in the tunnel,
yeah.
In the build, only because we know Gus is hot. He's ready to kill somebody. He's not going to let that mistake again. I was just waiting for Gail to say the wrong thing before it took for, you know, and then obviously, thank God Gail is better at reading Gus than poor Verna is. Gail knows immediately that this is not the time to be trifling with this man and let me get out while I can.
Yeah, and also, by the way, it's not as much an uncomfortable moment. We've already focused on it, but the heartbreaking, painful moment when Kim realizes just how insincere he is, that Jimmy sees the fact that people were moved by what he said. He calls the guy an asshole, and like I said, Kim's a, so there's a lot of uncomfortability packed into
a lot of squeamish, cringy moments.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, again, we've got a little. I might squeeze an extra minute out of this, Josh, but just because it is the end of the season, and on the whole, I thought it was a fascinating ride. Slow burn, but that's what we're in for with this show. And I mean, look, it took 4 years for him to become the guy that we all know he's going to become. And I find the journey to be fascinating and very enjoyable. And now that he's Saul, we still have to bring him up to speed and catch him up to the point where we meet him in Breaking Bad. So I'm excited about all of it. Al, in basically a minute, your overall thoughts on season 4 and where you hope we go in season 5.
Well, I mean, it's, I'm actually, even though we know he's officially Saul now,
yeah,
there's still a few loose ends like we want to tie up, you know, with Nacho and all that. So we hope we get to see what pans out with him. We hope we get to see what pans out with Kim. Granted, I don't want her to die, but maybe it's, maybe she suffers some major life setback. Like she gets disbarred because of him. Those are things, those are the chances that she's taking with him. So, but again, a tribute to, Bob Odenkirk, because I was just doing some research, and way back when Vince Gilligan hired him, the only thing he said to that character when he wanted to play him in Breaking Bad, he said, "I just want a sleazy lawyer who can be comic relief." Now he's all that, but look how many other layers Bob Odenkirk brought to that.
Yeah, and the quote from Bob Odenkirk, and this is our news segment here. He said to Rolling Stone in 2012, he was wondering, what the hell are they doing hiring me for this? I wouldn't have been surprised if I showed up on set and they said, oh my goodness, no, no, no. We wanted the other Bob Odenkirk, the one who does dramas. And look, I talked about this from the beginning of this show that we do, the after show. I always knew him as comedy, and I just – who knew he had all of this in him? So it's been so fun to watch, and also very unfun at times, but it's all been great.
He's been nominated for Emmys, but never got one, right?
Yeah, and for me personally, this has been so much fun just talking about this season, getting to know the other Bavarian boy. Look, I've done a lot of shows here at AfterBuzz, and I still do, and this is kind of the best chat to interact with because people are so excited about the show. They have so many theories, and so many times you guys know stuff we don't, and some people would take umbrage with that. I love that you guys know more than we do because that's so fun. I love the back and forth. And even the guy who said that Kim was going to die, I love that you put that in my head and you were wrong. So then I got to be surprised by it. This has been a ton of fun to do this show, and we should assume season 5 will come back around the same time next fall. But thanks so much to everybody who's been with us, especially for people on the East Coast who stay up this late. It's been a great season. If you're interested in finding the other shows that I do that I alluded to, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ, including the Trump Report, which is Tuesdays at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, on AfterBuzz. Al, where do people find
Everybody
you?
Everybody definitely go check out my boy Christian's show, The Trump Report. That's his baby, and it's a good one. I was on there last week. Yeah, so, but I finally, okay, I got Vikings coming up in a few weeks. Check your AfterBuzz schedule, and we just got our new Black Twitter show approved on Black Hollywood Live. I don't know if I should talk about it, but it's the sister network to
AfterBuzz. If people want to know more about it, they follow you where?
Follow me at JamaicaHouseDoc on Twitter.
All right, thanks so much, everybody, and we can leave you with the important advice. It's all good, man.
It's all good, man. There you go. There's that bell. Let me get it.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world. And we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz, see you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.